your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond.
Welcome back to another episode of Alchemy. We've got a great crew today, co-hosting with me, Chad Bronstein and Aristotle Loomis, co-founders at Philo, and Scott Catoon, CEO of Technori. Guys, great to have everybody together today.
Thank you for having me. I just wanted to ask, did you two guys, Chad and Aristotle, jump on this thing because you knew I was coming on, or is this normal?
Only for a few people.
Okay.
They like coming on for the VIPs, you know?
Yeah, then I'm not that guy.
So Scott, listen, you know, many of us know you from your talk show on WGN Radio and, of course, you know, the CEO of Technori. And, you know, it's great to have you on today. And, you know, I think one of the things that we were really excited to talk to you about is really how you really shaped Chicago into, you know, one of the largest and most inclusive tech ecosystems out there. And I thought it would be fun just to, you know, talk to, you know, our listeners and to us about, you know, your mission and how you've really helped accomplish, you know, all the great things you're doing in Chicago for the scene.
No, I appreciate that. You know, I think I've played a small part. I think there's a lot of big, you know, Hyde Park Angels has played a huge role in wrangling angel investors, and Chicago Inno played a big role in getting Chicago sort of a news rag that people could actually like follow. You know, TechCrunch and other things weren't covering us. And then on the Technori side, you know, originally the design was just to give people a stage to pitch on. That was it. Like, where do you go to find out about cannabis companies versus apps versus doggy apps versus SaaS companies, whatever? There just wasn't, you know, this is before 1871. There was no place to gather. And how do you keep it entrepreneur focused? And so I really looked at it like, how do I create I call it a safe space. That sounds kind of weird, but how do I create a safe space where founders, entrepreneurs, investors can gather. And if you come in selling or slinging some kind of crap, everyone knows you immediately and it looks weird. And so you don't come in. And that was sort of like trying to create that safe box. And as we evolved, and it started going digital with the show and with our partnership with the Republic, which Aristotle knows very well. You know, it became, in my mind, I got a chip on my shoulder because when I tried to get this thing off the ground the first time, everyone looked at me like I was nuts and said podcasting was stupid and this whole thing would never work. And at the end of the day, I just felt like that was an attitude that Chicago founders needed to get rid of. We needed to start thinking bigger and look at Chicago as like, look, we got this ecosystem with all this money and all this business and all this power, and we're not using it. And we should be telling people we're a major city and we come from Chicago and we have this backing. And then we sort of create that groundswell to go out to Silicon Valley, New York, or wherever, you know, and raise real money and do real business. But we have our own kind of ethos, if that makes sense. And so that was it. For me, it was just like a mission to get everyone on board and do one big thing. And if they didn't get on board or didn't want to, then the train was leaving the station.
It's great. Yeah. And I feel like Chicago alone, I mean, so much attention right now, especially in the cannabis sector, so many amazing companies coming out of there, so many amazing entrepreneurs coming out of there. So it's great to see and great work. Like, I love it.
Yeah, no. Well, one, it's awesome to be on the other side of this. I feel like this is like therapy. Like I, in a lot of ways, I'll tell you the podcast story and try to keep it short because I don't want to waste the whole time on just that stuff. But I remember when I first started the podcast, and this is even my first podcast. This is 2013, 2012. It's before Technori podcast. I had to tell people I had a show at WGN Radio, and they would be like, "Is this the live radio?" And I would just bullshit and say, "Yeah, it's live radio." Because if I said it was a podcast, I couldn't get anyone to come on. They were like, "What is that? Why would I want to share? I want to be on the radio." And so for the longest time, until maybe a couple of years ago, podcast, I was the only one, at least in my little circle, who was like proud to say, like, I'm a podcaster. You know, most people were, it was radio or die. And I never understood why people didn't get that podcast has so many legs. It's got, you know, SEO value, there's digital shareability, social media stuff, unfiltered. There's so much stuff. You could be a real person, you could be a personality, and you're not tied down to a brand necessarily, and just a lot of stuff. And so, you know, to me, when I launched the podcast and it started picking up and I started getting guys like you on and started getting, you know, George Boosis and all these other guys were coming on the show and we're having a great time. It just sort of clicked. It made sense to me, I guess. And it originally, you know, I don't know if you know this, Aristotle, but I'm pretty introverted. Like, I really don't like big like gatherings. I it's a hard thing for me. Networking was always really hard. I went to like, I don't know, I was just trying to start a business and I went to some network at night, network Tuesday at night type of thing. And I felt awful. I felt like I was going to throw up. And I was like, I didn't like it. I had to get like super loaded to even make it work. And so then I was like, I got to find a way to meet all these people I need to know. And literally, you know, from that moment on, I did a podcast. I would like, I want to meet this person. I would invite them on my podcast. And that's how I got to meet them. And then I never had to network and it just sort of took off from there. And now it's, you know, now everyone's into doing podcasts. Everyone's got a show. And I think that's great. I think it's a really cool way to share stories. And only the people who will listen are the ones who want to listen. And if that's two people or 50 or 1,000, doesn't matter.
That's great. And one, I enjoyed being your guest when I was on with Aristotle. I have a two-pronged question for you, Scott. You invested in tons of companies. Can you talk? And we've had a couple other funds on this podcast as well. And it's good to hear how people vet companies, right? So love to hear how you're vetting investment opportunities. And then I'll go into my next question.
Yeah. So that's a really good question. I'm glad you asked this one because surprisingly, my answer, at least so far in the shows I've listened to, my answer is different than most investors for a number of reasons. And it's probably the number one reason that me doing like a fund that includes other people's money may not be a great idea. It could be, but probably not a great idea on the front. So I don't have a thesis. I mean, that's not to say I don't have guidelines. I have, you know, rules, but I don't have a thesis where it's like, if this company is X, I will or I will not invest. If this company is in X industry, I will or I will not. If this company is raising at X number, you know, round or percentage, I will or I will not. I have a feeling and it's made up of about four different pieces and the pieces are pretty simple. And this is, of course, you know, I've had 1,000 pitches on stage or on my show. So, I mean, it's not like it's, you know, it's not like I just pulled it out of thin air. Right off the bat, I have to believe that I can like bring the idea of what you're trying to do into like 7 words. Like if I have to explain for 1,000 degrees to understand what you're ultimately trying to, the value you're ultimately trying to create, if I can't boil it down to something simple, I just find it very difficult to believe you'll execute. There are some people like the Elon Musk of the world that's a different story. They've proven they can, but for the average Joe or Jane, I got to be able to sum it down. Then after I do that, I want to know like, do I see you there? Do I think there's people out there who would actually like do this and do a lot of it? A lot meaning either high volume or they'd spend a lot of money on it. Because if I don't feel like that's a thing, then I don't even want to dig into it. The founder has to have an it factor. This is like the claim to fame, I think, on Philo is like you got every person involved in this company's got an it factor. And so I think, you know, that probably speaks to why you guys were so successful at raising. And getting this company going is you knew how to pick the right people who knew what they were doing and they were awesome at it. It's really, really hard to find a startup to invest in any company, really, who not only does the founder a rock star, but like the surrounding cast is a rock star. I've turned down deals where the founder was just absolutely awesome. And I met the co-founder and I was like, you got to be out of your mind. Like there's no chance in hell that dude, like that's your first buyout right there. Like, oh, here's my money. Take half, get him out. And you know, so the it factor and the founder, I got to believe in them. And then at the end of it, it's like, would I be able to get my money back? Like, and that is a very serious question. Some companies are not investable. Also, some companies are super investable, but like I won't be able to get my money out because it's going to be an IPO type company. It's going to be forever. So I factor all those things together and I just sort of get this gut feeling of like, okay, I get it. I know this space. I totally understand what you're trying to do. I think there's a ton of people who could do it. I think if anyone was going to do it, you could be the one to do it. And you're asking for how much money? Is it 2,000, 20,000, 200,000, 2 million? I will figure out either out of my own pocket or people I know, or I'll put together a little syndicate. I'd get very creative with how I do those investments and what I do. And a lot of the stuff has stemmed from equity crowdfunding. I do a lot of like $2,000 to $10,000 drops in companies, and then we'll pile on the backside of a real, you know, pricing round with friends, you know, later if I really see something. And just to wrap a bow on that, I'm including Aristotle, who's one of the few people that I invested in on Republic, you know, in the beginning and early into. I have 4 out of the 7 companies that I've invested more than $1,000. 4 out of the 7 have exited already in less than 2.5 years. So I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I couldn't write it down on a on an envelope with metrics, but I just know it when I see it.
Well, from stats perspective, you are a CEO and you've helped other founders raise almost $1 billion in venture funding. You've had 25 exits and over 20 billion in collective ARR. So I guess you know what you're doing, right? Your thesis, you may not have a standard thesis, but in your head, you know how to find a unicorn or find a great opportunity to invest in. Can you talk us about some of the, it's kind of what you just answered, but from the success and you've had and your plans to continue to grow the fund, can you walk us through that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to use you guys as an example, Philo, if I can. I mean, you know, I look for companies that are in a space, either in a space that's extremely well established so that you kind of know what all of the spikes are. You kind of know, like, this is how this goes. Like, you're not gonna be shocked at Salesforce. You kind of know what space they're in and CRM. Like, it'd have to be a pretty amazing, maybe AR, VR technology changes and some automation changes that like totally change that space, you know, for them. I like spaces that I either know predictably what's going to happen, and then I'm adding a variable, which in this case is the startup that does something that I think could spike either a wave up, which is the J curve for them, or it spikes a reactionary where there's a bunch of other companies that race to try to copy. And then you get a little volatility, and that's where you invest into the volatility. I look at you guys and I say it's the perfect scenario. So this, the first one, which is the predictable. Then there's the other one, which is cannabis as an example, which is incredibly unpredictable in given, like, you can use some comps, but generally speaking, it's unpredictable because it's only been legal in certain capacities in certain places. So there are pockets all over the place that are unpredictable. And a company like Philo comes in and goes, I'm going to focus on keeping my eye on those things so that you can focus on the tried and true business practice. And we know you'll be more successful because we're watching for you. And like, that's such a no-brainer. There's no company out there that can't use you. So if I answer the first two questions, like, all right, rockstar founders, yep, duh. Is this a space that has a ton of there? Of course, everyone and their brother is either going to be buying, smoking, or rubbing it on themselves, or wearing shirts and shit that's made of it. So yeah, it's an insane market. Is there a company there that's able to sort of plug itself in as a filter that everyone has to go through? And if you're able to be that one, you're going to be gazillionaires. And so when I saw you guys, I was like, oh my God, if I had a fund at the time and was there, please make me part of that round. So, you know, that's what I'm looking for. As far as the round, I'll be honest, like when I first did the deal with Mike Rothman from SMS Assist, who, you know, built a $1 billion company on top of building a couple $100 million company before that. And, you know, we wanted to start a fund, and now we've sort of pivoted into, he's dumped a lot of money into a company called Second Avenue, which is a kind of an iBuyer property management real estate company, similar to, I guess you'd call it like 2.0 if you were saying SMS was the first one, this would be the second. It's like the same thing. So anyway, he gets into this and he's heads down, and I understand it. I had to fend for myself, and we didn't raise the fund that we wanted to raise and do what we wanted. We did kind of a family office hybrid of what the initial Technori plan was. And now in retrospect, you know, I don't know if we're going to raise a formal fund. If so, it would have to be backdoor, because we've been getting involved in so many deals that, like, I'm actually physically involved. Like, I want to work with the company. I don't want to just give them the money, and I don't want to give them money and then be like their boss. That's not the goal. It's like, how much money could we put to use, and how can I help you? So I think, you know, whether we end up going the route of the fund in the future, the way that we originally planned or not, I think is still to be determined. But I definitely am using the revenue that comes in from Technori to invest into individual deals and just sort of leave them there. My guess, and to kind of answer your question as best I can, you know, if I continue to have a batting average where like 4 out of 7 are exiting, I'm pretty sure someone's going to throw a bag of money at me right in the face with it, and we'll have fun.
I would agree. I would agree with that. 4 out of 7 is pretty damn good in the start.
In 2 years, I don't even there's nothing in common. Like nothing in common with these companies. We're talking fintech, legal tech, food tech. You know, and like the only common denominator is all of them had founders who, you know Aristotle well, and everyone listening to this show knows Aristotle. You meet a person like Aristotle, and you immediately that person's number gets saved in your phone. Like that's just the way it is. And that is, I mean, you guys are all executives. You're all leaders. You know how absolutely hard it is to crack into somebody's Rolodex and be a remembered person that you can like call back later. It's very difficult. It's a natural skill. And if the founder or the CEO can't do that, it's going to be tough.
Agreed. That's very good insight.
Scott, let's talk a little bit about Technori. So, you know, you guys obviously offer a really powerful stage for entrepreneurs to present their ideas and, you know, in turn, market their products. So, you know, talk to us a little bit about some of your experience, at least on the cannabis side. So like, how are you empowering cannabis entrepreneurs?
So the cannabis entrepreneurs thing is a great question. I actually love, you'll find this interesting. So throughout my entire life and through college, I never smoked marijuana ever. And I wasn't like avoiding it. Like everyone in the room had about every drug in their system imaginable. I was just the one who was just drinking and I was good with that. And for whatever reason, I never thought about cannabis outside of the smoking part. And it just wasn't my world. And I've always been this, I'm not a person who I don't invest in things I don't use thing. Cause then it's like, all right, well then you don't invest in like 90% of stuff. It was never like that. I just didn't get into it. And then, but I obviously like gambling. I recognized the insane potential. So I would just kind of keep an eye on it. And then slowly and surely we had like 5 or 6 companies, mostly D2C, like Jane West, Wearwell, there's a few other ones that were kind of popping up. Juna is another one. And obviously Cresco Labs and these big dogs that you guys work with. They started showing up on the radio show. They were doing equity crowdfunding campaigns and then they would end up in the podcast. I think we had Panther Capital who invests in one of the early G's investing in cannabis related tech.
They're investors of ours too.
Oh yes. Yeah. Well, that's no surprise. I would imagine they'd have been like the first ones just waiting for you guys to form the docs. So good dudes. Right. And so we had them on the show and I just was like learning, like you would learn listening to anybody else's stuff. Right. And you just start like slowly learning. And I kind of like started to gather all of the pieces and see the puzzle come together for me where I was like, okay, I don't need to be a cannabis consumer necessarily, but I can still understand the journey and what people see in it. And after like 5 or 6 interviews with people who run different various things, I actually got approached by a company that is sort of, I talked to Aristotle about this offline, but is vertically integrated. They do cultivation and they're on the hemp side and it's non-intoxicating and it is farming. It's an ag tech company, really. If cannabis wasn't a buzzword, they'd just call them an ag tech company. And they were saying, hey, you know, we really should like build a brand and try to sell direct through this. And would you be interested? And I was like, I have nothing to do with cannabis in my life, but I would love to learn about what you're doing. And that was sort of my deep dive into it. And so then I started kind of learning more about it. And now, you know, I'm way low on the totem pole of like knowledge when it comes to this stuff, you know, than you guys, but I'm starting to see how cannabis, whether it's oils or it's hemp or it's flower or it's actually smoked or it's vape or whatever, I'm seeing all of these things coming around and it's like, this is an undeniable. I mean, you saw what happened, like Philip Morris, if they're not standing there watching all these guys, I don't know who is.
Obviously you're talking about the diversity and you know, what you're looking for and what makes a successful entrepreneur, and kind of changing gears here. What do you think, at least in your short time vetting cannabis entrepreneurs and cannabis brands, that's the best from the rest, if you will?
Yeah. So I'll tell you, and again, you guys are better to answer these questions on the cannabis than I am. I'm just sort of an observer. But I will tell you the number one thing for cannabis is like the people I talk to in the gambling space, the gaming industry. If you don't have your ducks in a row and you're not highly organized and you are not like more or less a lawyer or like very, very good friends with a lawyer, I just can't buy that you're going to be hugely successful. I think there's too many things, compliance and otherwise. Obviously, you guys deal with that every single day. I think there's too many things that you have to navigate. And if you don't have that as a part of your plan, it's like, you know, I'm looking at a company right now of getting involved in, and part of the raise, I have to tell them, like, listen, I need $1 million set aside for legal because that's how much shit's going to come my way. And I know it, but I know it. So I'm planning for it. And I think if I see that on the cannabis side and I see people coming in and they're not like that, I just don't think that they understand what they're getting into. And then on the other side of it, you know, I think that a lot of times you get too many of these people who are mechanical. They're not dreamers. And the cannabis industry obviously is not new. We've been smoking weed forever, but not legally. So, but the way it is now, it is new. It's a new industry. And I think to build something amazing in a new industry, you have to be a dreamer. You can't just be like a fanatical, you know, person. So I need to see you have organization and understanding of the compliance and the complexity, but I need to also see that you or your co-founders or whoever, that somewhere deep in there, there's a dreamer who's like, yeah, we're just going to take shots. Because that's how big things happen. So I think the two things there are probably, you know, attention to detail and the complexities, and also still have that creative side.
So I want to actually dive into that point a little bit more. Dreamers and new space, and what I'm really kind of reading between the lines there is that there's a major opportunity. And so can you expand on like what excites you most about the cannabis space?
Yeah. I mean, the reality is like, if you could go back in time and find I don't think of beer as a substance. If I could find like a recreational space that you could recreate with all the controls and mechanisms in place to be safe, to provide value, to be healthy, to be fun, to be a million things. If we could go back and redo tobacco, if we could go back and redo alcohol, if we could go back and redo, I don't know, name whatever, gambling in a sense, what could we do with that? And how great an industry could that be instead of kind of a black eye at times? This cannabis space to me, this is that. This is the ability to do those things without a prohibition, to do those things without this like sort of hiding what it is. Do this where it's like, no, here's where, you know, moderation is everything. And then here's where it's actually healthy. And there's a million applications from it. And I what I'm excited about is that I think the cannabis industry provides sort of a reset and an opportunity to do things the right way, a more transparent way, in a way that in a product area that, you know, for at least a half of it is for fun and for relaxation. And is kind of akin to alcohol and tobacco in some regards. So I think that is a really interesting opportunity. And then there's the obvious part, right? Which is that I don't know of any other, you know, substance that can be used for so many things. Like, what are the health opportunities? What are the benefits? What are the oil benefits? What are the use cases for hemp and flower? What, like, the recycling and the green sort of complements to using this? Like, there's so many things. So, I mean, I'm most excited about the fact that this is like a redo button. And then also just straight up, like, the financial opportunity is insane. And I think we all know that. And that's why a lot of us are sharks are swimming around the meat. Cause you just see this opportunity to like blow stuff up. And, you know, I can't think of anything where you're like, we do clothing that's cannabis oriented, and we also do oils, and we also do pharmaceuticals, and we also do recreational, and like, oh my God, Cresco Labs is a genius.
I love that. One thing that really stuck out, and I've actually never heard this before, is the ability to actually do it right. Right. We tobacco and alcohol have been here since the beginning of time. So it's cannabis. But what the difference is the opportunity to actually modernize it in a way that we haven't been able to do with, let's say, alcohol and tobacco. And the only pushback I have on the application part, cannabis having so many applications, I would argue that Windex has more applications as a Greek. So we put it on everything. But outside of that, I do have In terms of overlooking the last how many years and so much exposure that you've had, you know, seeing all these great startups, what has been your most favorite startup story at your time from tech?
I mean, like, so staying in line with the Greeks, I have to say and this isn't because you're the person asking this question, your story on stage and the father and the brothers and sisters, and they're all named after Greek gods, and the Ellison vision, the whole thing, it was one of the most memorable that we ever had, because it was like a true person telling the story. And then, you know, we have some that are good, some that are bad, companies that have been on stage and have pitched, and there's been some interesting ones like Rocket Dollar and Will and Trust and Codeverse for kids coding. There's all kinds of companies, ClearCover, that are raising $100 million and they're gigantic. But I think you and I both know the Greek connection here with Steve Galanis. Cameo is by far the most like ridiculous story on Technori ever. I remember you introduced me to Steven, and he has this idea, and he's like, people don't get it. It's like an autograph, modern autograph. And I was like, dude, I just texted him this the other day. Actually, I was like, do you remember in 2016, I told you you're a genius, and it's coming out true, because he's created a whole new category. I mean, it's a new category. And, you know, I think that, to me, for those who don't know what a Cameo is, you got to check it out. But I don't know many people listening to this who won't know what Cameo is. But at any point, that was one company where I remember when he first came in, he did the pod, he did the radio show, then he turned the app on stage in like January 17. And I remember walking back and just like, this dude's going to blow up, because I could just see the culmination of video and reality TV and people not having anything to do with their time. I got it. I thought it was huge. So that's the biggest one. The best ones are the ones that are true stories. They're people who are they just dig this one thing and they build a business around it.
Well, you're a big part of that, brother. And I know Steven and I appreciate you, and as do many of others.
I hope he remembers that when he rings the bell. That's what
last question for you. So how do you think investment in entrepreneurship and cannabis will grow and evolve over the next 5 to 10 years? I mean, and to elaborate, there's, you know, we're raising capital. We've been raising, we've obviously raised a good amount of it. And in the standard venture world, LPs are still, not necessarily being approving cannabis investments. How do you think that will change?
They're going to lose a lot of money not investing in cannabis. And all their investors are going to say, what the hell? And then that'll be that. Like, to be totally honest, I mean, it's just like, this is, again, not to make this about gaming as a comp. People demonized it and they made it into something that it's not. And you can misuse anything. I can abuse anything. I can become addicted to anything. I'm addicted to cameos, you know? So like, I really truly think that the investors and the banks that are foolishly not handling it and not putting the money in because they think it's got a bad, you know, bad word or whatever. It's the same thing as, like, again, the marketers who don't spend or previously hadn't spent money on advertising in like esports. Those that haven't advertised in esports because they felt like they didn't like the chatter on the back end. You know, they didn't feel like it was on brand. They're learning now that the volume of users is insane and that they're foolish for not doing it. So I think that the investing is going to change in several ways. I think you're going to see banks are going to become more opened up to it. It's going to become legal across the board at some point. Cities and states and the government are going to realize how much money that they're letting leak out the back door, literally, by not embracing and getting participating. And once they participate, then, you know, all the dominoes fall. I also think that cannabis has the opportunity to, at some point, it'll be a minute probably, but get involved on the equity crowdfunding side, where like we can invest in our own kind of, call it family run, if you want, farm or product. And I think we're seeing this right now. This is what I personally think is going to happen as a result of pandemic with restaurants. You know, I have, and I'm not saying this because I want people to think I'm a real nice guy. I've just been tipping like $100 bill tips every restaurant that I go to, because I know locally that, because I know that they're struggling and I know that their people have, you know, they've got the worst deal ever. And so what I actually think is like the future for restaurants should be that they raise some money from their restaurant group, but then afterward that they use a community to own an equity. I think everyone should own a share of the restaurants that they love downtown so that, you know, downtown Chicago, downtown Glen Ellyn, whatever it is, so they're supported and, you know, you invest in keeping the things that you enjoy. And I think cannabis is very similar. I think you can invest in the opportunity to own a piece of a brand that you smoke or you don't, or you wear or you use or whatever. So I actually think that this is something where if people are smart, there will actually be legality around it and they'll be able to invest in it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And, you know, if you think about even from a farming perspective, you have all these like, you know, farm shares that are going on for years. When this becomes federally legal, maybe you have a local artisan cannabis grower, right, that you could buy into and get, you know, weekly tastings, if you will, right? That might be really fun.
I really think that is like the consumer level of this, I think, is going to be there. It'll be a little while, obviously, but I think that's where it's going. And to answer Chad's question directly, I mean, I just think any of these investors who are holding out on this, they're just going to be the last at the table, which is fine. Their money's going to come in anyway. It'll just be at a higher price.
I agree. I think it's going to get more and more frequent, especially with safe banking, but you know, we'll see. There's still a lot of venture funds out there that are not necessarily afraid. Like the venture groups want to invest, but there's LPs that are just compliance departments that are not allowing it through.
When Philo, you know, exits for, you know, $8 billion, then that'll change.
Exactly. Well, Scott, you've listened to the show before, so you know the drill. We talk business at the beginning, and then we have just some quick fire questions to top off the show. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So fill in the blank. Taylor Swift is
a genius. She literally figured out she's Chance the Rapper for country music.
Favorite junk food of all time.
Oh man, that's a good one. I mean, I would say it's got to be candy, right? It can't be French fries. I feel like French fries is cheating.
I don't know. I'm a French fry guy, but this is your.
Are we allowing French fries? If French fries. I mean, that tells you how bad my diet is that I'm questioning whether French fries. Then I think the answer is French fries.
Well, I guess then we answer the next question. What's your favorite carbs? I'm guessing it's potatoes.
Yeah, I would say like potatoes. I also like noodles a lot. So, I mean, I only eat carbs, really. That's my whole diet.
So here's a good question for you. Have you ever posted inspirational quotes on social?
I do it every single day. We post a quote from like the top quote from every podcast we do. Some of them aren't inspirational, but I definitely do. Now I don't do like Walt Whitman or you know some shit like that on my Twitter. I'm not that guy.
Well, I guess Jeff knows who he's speaking to. So back on the food questions, what's something you could eat for a week straight? And let's change it up. It can't be potatoes or candy.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest, like I do this weeks straight. I'll give you the real answer is like Lipton bags of noodles. Like I will put a Lipton, I don't know if you guys ever see this in the store. It's the least healthy thing. It's 8,000 carbs or whatever. It's just a bag that you pour water and like salt into and then throw in the microwave for 15 minutes and eat and feel like a savage. So that is like what I lived on in college and when I first started a company. And now that's what I would still do. But also I do Tavalas, which are different meals, but a Chicago startup that we support and love. So we do Tavalas.
I've actually never heard of this rich ramen.
Sounds
fancier.
It's, you know, it's not fancier. It's just more. It's just a bigger bag. Fat guy edition.
Scott, last question. Name a word that starts with the letter Q.
Quartz.
Quartz. I like it. Awesome. Well, listen, Scott, we appreciate you kind of doing the role reversal today and being a guest on our show and, you know, great insight, you know, keep up the great work and really inspirational what you're doing for all the entrepreneurs in Chicago. So thanks again.
No, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity. And of course, I'm a big fan of all of you guys individually, but Philo as a whole. For anyone listening who's interested in the crazy stuff that comes out of my mouth, you can follow me on Twitter at Katoon. And you can catch all of our reviews on Instagram at Technori or at Katoon. And of course, I would love for you to listen and check out my podcast, which is Technori Podcast, and that is on Spotify.
Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you guys very much. Have a wonderful day.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.